building a company from nothing is freaking hard. Us entrepreneurs are expected to deal with unimaginable challenges and somehow keep a cool head through it all. This is The Art of Entrepreneurship, and I'm your host, Jackie Hermes. I grew my company, Excelity, from 0 to 7 figures with no partners and no funding. The Art of Entrepreneurship is a show where we cut through the BS and dig into what it actually takes to start and grow a company. If you give me your time, I promise it won't be wasted. Now let's get to work.
Hello and welcome back to The Art of Entrepreneurship. Today we are talking about health, which is a topic that I love to talk about a lot, as you all know, and aging with guest Chris Mirabile, who is the founder and CEO of Novos. Novos is the first health tech company to develop science-based solutions that address the 12 biological causes of aging. This conversation was really, really fascinating, y'all. Novos has two different companies, essentially. One that sells longevity supplements and another, which is Novos Bio, that has a mission to disrupt humanity's concept of aging by developing cutting-edge biotechnologies, tests, and therapies that slow down the aging process. We talk about how Chris has essentially cut his aging process by 13.6 years, and we talk about what that means. That doesn't actually mean that you're aging in reverse, which is impossible. Although some people like to claim it's not. We get into all of those things and the impact that it has on business, both health when you take care of it, health when you don't, and health when you go too far, like how everyone's getting into biohacking and what that means today. So tune in and welcome Chris.
So Chris, you survived a brain tumor at 16. And instead of slowing down, which I feel like is probably a natural reaction for a lot of people, you became obsessed with optimizing performance and longevity. Talk to me about how that circumstance and going through that shaped your life and your entrepreneurial journey.
Sure. So that event, it made me from a very early age acutely aware of how fragile life is and what health ultimately is. Prior to that, I was really focused on health from the superficial side, right? So really just focused on being in great shape, playing sports well, lifting heavy weights, looking good on the beach, you know, like the typical superficial things people think about when they think of health. But then I had a rude awakening, realizing that I could pass away so easily because you feel invincible as a teenager, like nothing's going to stop you. At least I did. And that stopped me in my tracks. So that planted a seed in my mind, one that took years to kind of blossom into what I am now doing. But early on, still, I was very interested in being as healthy as I could be. One of the first goals I set for myself actually after recovering from the brain tumor was going into my senior year of high school. I wanted to challenge myself to qualify for the National Physical Fitness Championships that was hosted by the U.S. Marine Corps in San Diego, California. And my school had never participated in it before, but I kind of lobbied my administration and the athletic department, and I convinced them, and I got some of my classmates to do it with me, and fortunately qualified for the fitness championships in San Diego, and it was an amazing experience to go through that. But when I'm kind of like knocked down, I'm the type of person who's like, I will continually get up over and over and over again, whether it be physically with my health or entrepreneurially with a failed venture. Give me a few months and I'm already thinking about and executing on something new.
That is seriously like a core important characteristic of being an entrepreneur, is that every time you're down, you have to be able to get back up. And there's not going to be someone there picking you back up, right? It's like that mental game that you lose the big deal that you're working on, or a big customer leaves, or whatever it is. And you're like, all right, well, what am I going to do next? You don't really have time to just sit and wallow and, you know, and that's exactly what you did. Well, here's what I'm going to do next. And it wasn't just a path laid out in front of you. It's okay, here's something I want to do. So I'm going to go lobby for it. So I love that. And I bet that skill has served you well in your journey.
Yes. Thank you. Well, and that actually makes me think of a time where I had a failed startup company, and this was in my 20s. And, you know, there was a little bit of that, because throughout my life, I always did have positive support, always had people around me, you know, cheering me on or supporting me or financially supporting in the form of investors for the venture and so on. And then in my mid to late 20s, having a failed venture, there was no one there to save me, right? Like I had my family and my friends to like be there for me. But ultimately, I was alone with myself in my room looking in the mirror and saying, you have failed with this company and you have to accept that and you need to move on. And you need to rebuild yourself. And it's a difficult realization to come to when everything else you've kind of succeeded with, to have that first really big failure it just brings you to a different point in your life. It's a growth experience to really go through that. And it changes you as a person in many ways.
It does. Absolutely. So a lot of founders are chasing quick wins. We work as an agency with companies that it's always this battle, right? Of I need to work on the long game and we need quick wins. And you said you work with investors, right? They have expectations too of the long game and quick wins. How do you balance that need for research, credibility, transparency in what you do, and that science first approach, which is the long game versus the expectation, like the short-term expectations of investors?
You know, it's a question that I've been asking from the very beginning, because as much as I was a personal customer of supplements and was already interested in that field, I also knew that there was a lot of snake oil in the field and not that much scientific validation around a lot of big claims that people make for these different products. And then, of course, you've got the opposite extreme, which is scientists and biotech and the pharmaceutical route, where there's tons of scientific studies you need to do on humans and show that it outperforms a placebo and so on. Like there's just like two different worlds. And I wanted to find a way to take the better aspects of each of those worlds and create a business that could then thrive in the intersection of as a hybrid between the two.
So I think I read that you have reversed your own aging by 13.6 years? Is that right?
That's about right. I mean, it changes each time you run the test, it's going to be slightly different, but I think 13.6 is the correct number. I'd have to check my own website or my
spreadsheets. Gosh.
But I just want to be clear about that, because a lot of people are going out publicly saying that they have reversed their age, or that they're aging, you know, like they're the equivalent of a 12-year-old, or they're aging 50% slower than that. And it's like all of these crazy things. And it doesn't literally mean that. So we can measure how fast or slow we're aging using different tests, like epigenetic tests. And there are different algorithms. Some are better than others. There are many influencers out there who are using, say, like a standard blood panel and using a crude algorithm, and then they're saying that they're biologically younger. Anytime someone says they're biologically younger, first of all, you need to have an eye of skepticism and ask, well, how did you test it? What algorithm did you use? How accurate is that algorithm? Is it peer reviewed in scientific literature? Like, there's all of these questions that most people just won't ask. But to clarify with my numbers, this is based on the average of multiple different algorithms that are used in the scientific community and found to be very accurate for determining how old one is biologically. Now, what does that even mean, though? So we're chronologically, I'm 41, but biologically, most of the time when I take tests, it's in the late 20s or early 30s. So I don't look like I'm 28 years old. Like, you know, I went on a date recently and the girl was very friendly and kind and said I looked like I was like 35. Okay, So let's just pretend we believe that for a second, right? So let's pretend I look like I'm 35 when I'm 41. I don't look like I'm 28 years old, right? So what's going on if a test tells me I'm 28? What it means is that based on my epigenome, so which genes are turned on and off, which react to our environments and how healthy we are, I have the approximate morbidity risk and mortality risk and quality of life of that of a person in their late 20s. In other words, every 7 to 8 years, our risk of death and disease doubles. My cellular biology is that of someone about 14 years younger than me. So that is approximately 1/4 of the risk of getting a disease of aging. We're talking about cancer, heart disease, diabetes, Alzheimer's, et cetera. All of these things start to happen in our 30s, and then they increase in our 40s and 50s and 60s, and they become exponential. So my risk is about 1/4 that of the average person. It doesn't mean that I'm actually literally in my 20s biologically in every sense of the word. Right. It's not the case.
You're not physically aging in reverse and celebrating birthdays in reverse. I feel like people take those statements really far.
They do.
It's an interesting industry.
And it's not the case. And you should be skeptical of the people who say things like that. No one has ever aged in reverse. Certain organs or organ function, you can make it perform that of somebody younger, but it's not actually the organ getting younger again. It's like if the average 40-year-old has a VO2 max of 40, I don't know the exact number, but let's just say 40, and mine's 56, and that is of a 25-year-old. That doesn't mean my heart and my arteries are that of a 25-year-old. It just means I'm performing as well as an average 25-year-old. That's it.
Right.
Two different things.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I think that a lot of entrepreneurs and founders have a lot of misconceptions around health in general. Why do you think that is? And how might they be limiting their success with those misconceptions? Do you have an opinion around that?
Well, I think it depends on how you mean that, because some entrepreneurs have a conception of health or how they should treat their health in the sense of like, always work, you know, nonstop working, late night, all of that, right? Then you've also got like entrepreneurs who are like biohacker types as well, which I think there's two sides to that. It can be good and it can be bad at the same time. So in that first group, I'd say I was always that type. Like when I graduated college, I went into private equity, essentially investment banking, and you work past midnight and you're back in the office at 8 or 9 a.m. and you're working weekends and you're doing this like nonstop work. People would show off about working 80 or 100 hour weeks. Like it was a badge of pride. And I fell into that trap because, you know, you associate hard work with success and sacrifice. And it's like, I am sacrificing to do what I need to do to succeed. And there is some pride with that. But ultimately I came to realize in my late 20s, early 30s that there's nothing more important than getting a good amount of sleep and being cognitively sound the next day. Like you wake up refreshed. You can think as clearly as possible. Stress doesn't get to you in the same way as if you had a poor night of sleep, and you're more likely to be physically active and eat a healthy diet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of those things are crucial for an entrepreneur is to be able to cope with stress, think clearly, deal with multitasking, all of that stuff. So sleep is fundamental. For the biohackers, I'd say that oftentimes they always have the best intentions. And some people would call me a biohacker, but I think there's a fundamental difference in the sense that oftentimes biohackers become religious about what they're doing and everything needs to be perfection at all times. And you fall into the trap of orthorexia, for example, which is disordered eating in the sense of always needing to calorie count or get the right macros or to fast at this point in time and so on. And it can lead to like poor social connections. You're not physically present with people because you're not going to eat with them or et cetera, right? So there's just so many things that can potentially go wrong with obsessing over all of these metrics and And I think mm-hmm. I'm in Europe right now. It's all about, like, you know, a balance of quality of life, right? And so lot of people, even in the longevity space, are focused only on quantity of life and they throw out quality of life. And I personally believe in Pareto's principle. I think get 80% of the way there with 20% of the effort, whatever that ratio actually happens to be. I'd rather maintain quality of life while also extending quantity of life at the same time, but don't sacrifice either one of them significantly.
Yeah, I watched the clip of, what is it, Brian Johnson, when he went on Keeping Up with the Kardashians, and it was wild, like them all eating dinner together. It was very funny, but I was like, what is happening right now? It was really crazy. Not that you've seen that, but I saw it on social media.
I heard about it, but I missed it.
Yeah. It was very interesting, and the commentary and everything was really funny. But let's end with what I assume is probably a pretty cool story, because I was poking around on your LinkedIn and I saw that you were featured in Longevity Hackers, which is a documentary, and you were featured alongside Mark Cuban and Tony Hawk. How did that happen? Like, tell me, how did that came about? And what do you think this kind of like mainstream storytelling around this, like this topic that we're talking about, what is it doing for the category and for people that are interested in it?
Yeah. So the opportunity came to my desk because, as most things tend to be, the longevity industry is actually a very small world. It's a small industry. There's only a few hundred people that are really at the core of longevity. Tons of people talking about it, thousands, tens of thousands, whatever it might be, talking about it. But those who are actually in the field, innovating, the scientists, the researchers, the nonprofits, the medical doctors, and so on, it's a very small group. And so there was a lot of conversation about this, and people were making recommendations for different people to be in the show. In fact, there are many people in the documentary who I know personally. One of my investors is had some airtime. One of my scientific advisors, Dr. Matt Kaeberlein, he was in the documentary. A scientist who I consulted with, that's too big of a term, that I had conversations with about my idea for Novos before I even launched it, Dr. Nir Barzilai. He was in the documentary. So it's one of those small world things, and people recommend each other to be part of it. Now, Mark Cuban and Tony Hawk and Steve Aoki and Tony Robbins, those people were kind of, they're not exactly in the longevity field, but they're enthusiasts of it. And having that like celebrity appeal for the film, the producers, I'm sure, wanted to have them in there to build up a little bit more attention and hype for the film.
Help draw the audience. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Well, that's very cool. I love it. All right. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciated your time and a very interesting topic that we have not covered on the podcast before in all 300 some episodes. So I really appreciate it. And for anyone that's listening, if you got value today, if you learned something new, which I know you for sure did, share this with one person that is interested in checking out Chris's supplements, interested in learning more about his incredible story. Share this with them, and we will talk to you next time. Thank you so much.